You're with Dan on Double J.
Yeah. I mean, for someone like him, when you read the book, you're just reminded of how incredibly young they all were. What's it like to watch someone grow up, and particularly in an experience like that, when they are forced into the spotlight in such an often brutal way?
Yeah, it was reckless. I mean, it was really harsh. Imagine being 15, you know, Tomorrow's come out, Frog Stomp's come out, you suddenly catapulted into the limelight, essentially going from playing in the loft above the Gillies garage to the Horden Pavilion, to these big shows, the big day out. Coming home from while still being at school, being hounded by paparazzi, then finding runaways on your front lawn who expect you to have all the answers because, you know, every rock star does. Right?
Yes.
And then getting headlines in the newspaper where Dan, there was one particular one where Daniel was riding his bike and it says, how the $6 million boy gets to school. You know, how do you deal with that?
God.
You know,
yeah.
So, you know, it was a lot to deal with. It really was.
He was clearly a talent from the very early days. He's one of the great songwriters and creative minds in Australia working still today. But was there something about the time and place in Australian music or even world music that allowed Silverchair to succeed at that time, at
no
that
doubt
moment?
About it. Yeah, yeah, absolutely, no doubt about it. I mean, it's 1994, Kurt Cobain has died. I think Pearl Jam were off the road and not recording because they were in a big fight with Ticketmaster in the States about ticketing prices.
Yeah.
They were out of action. So suddenly there was a vacuum for a new... I don't hate the word grunge, but they were.
It's the only word you can describe it.
Yeah, that's what the sound was. Mm. But they weren't necessarily taking that from Nirvana. They were taking that from their parents' records. You know, Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, the heavy records of the 70s. That's where they were getting their main influences from. It just so happened that they also tuned into Nirvana and Soundgarden and Pearl Jam and sort of mashed the two up. I think they did it brilliantly and probably as good as any other band in the world at that time. And, of course, the big thing about that was, you know, how can a 15-year-old kid sing like that? But, you know, they had that novelty, I guess is the best way to describe it, even though it's not a really fair way to describe the band because they were very serious about what they were doing. They were kids.
Yeah.
You know, it was like Angry Hanson. You know, it was. And Daniel
Angry
looked great.
Angry Hanson is a great way to describe
Silverchair. Daniel looked great. And quite often, even though they were sort of, you know, surly teenagers who didn't say too much, they'd sometimes come up with some pretty funny stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
So I think they're very funny.
They really
band.
Had it going for them. And, you know, they would occasionally brown eye out of the back of the tour bus, you know.
Particularly, like cool teenagers. Yeah,
like cool teenagers would.
When you're looking at the career of a life, and it's easy to, you know, an artist's life, it's easy to look back, you know, with 2020 and go, oh, yeah, I knew which direction he was going in.
Hindsight's wonderful,
exactly.
Isn't it?
But the, you know, as someone who's tracked his whole career trajectory from Silverchair through his solo work, through the big flourishes of, you know, his later work with Silverchair and now into a project like Dreams. Can you see a line that goes through them? Can you kind of see the trajectory, or is he someone who always surprises with his next project?
Look, I think the one thing that's constant is that not so much the first two Silverchair records, but everything since then is going to be radically different from what came before.
Yeah.
You may not know what it will be.
Always renewal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's there's no repetition at all. And I think perhaps at the end the problem was someone hoped for a bit of repetition, you know. There's great stories about, you know, Diorama is a good example of Neon Ballroom. To me, was a transitional record between the grungy stuff, the early stuff, and what Daniel was seeking, which was a kind of orchestral, you know, quite epic, slightly psychedelic, quite a radical new form of rock and roll, if you like. Mm. Still with guitar, bass and drums, but really pushing into new directions. Neon Ballroom is about half of that. If you remember, there's a lot of kind of grungy songs, but there's also Anna's Song and Emotion Sickness and things that are really quite different to anything they've done before.
Yeah.
You know, whereas Diorama was right out there.
Yep.
I mean, it really was. It was a radically different thing. And full marks to someone who says, you know what? That's what it is. That's what I'm going to do.
He's always moving forward though, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And that's I guess, the best way to sum up. The great artists to me are the ones that are going to rub you the wrong way occasionally, but you're going to hang in there with them because you know you're going to love some of it.
Double J.